Good morning. Here we are. So I'll just launch right into that we're going to be now quiet. And those who put their hands up, I don't need to know this, but some of you are newer to meditation and some of you haven't spent hours together in silence. Is that right? So I'm just going to mention what it's like. Initially, for some people, it feels very peculiar because it's so not what we do. We talk all the time when we're close to people. It's a gift to everybody else to leave them alone. So you'll find it's a gift to you that people won't be checking you out, looking to see your response to them. All of the social cues about how to relate to each other, we can just put down for the day. This is about our own experience, our own tuning into what's going on inside ourselves without having to keep coming out and explain or respond or anything like that. So actually the feeling when you get used to it is such a relief. It's like we spend so much energy, you know, in that dance. And so it's a break from that dance. It looks peculiar because people aren't responding to your face. They're just, some people look depressed because their eyes are down rather than engaging each other. We're not necessarily depressed just because we're keeping our eyes down. think of it as a kindness rather than an unfriendliness. It's actually a gesture of respect in leaving people alone. And pretty soon you'll get to appreciate it and wish we should do it more. that includes, if you can, we're quietening down the engaged part of our brains and our hearts and our beings and just settling and getting to know the quieter side of ourselves. So don't engage yourself in lots of writing or reading even in the times between the formal sitting in this room, so that you can allow, I think of it as the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. We're going to let the left hemisphere calm down. It's very busy and very engaged and very organized and organizing, and we're going to rest, and we want to be more in touch with the mysterious, more subtle part of our right hemisphere. And so not talking, not making notes, not having to plan as much as possible, trying to just be here simply. So that's why we'll be quiet today. And reasonably quiet during lunch. I mean, depending on where you go, those staying here have lunch. Most of us will just stay quiet for the lunch period. If you have to go to a restaurant, you have to order your food. That's allowed. Okay. So Bruce always asks me in different places where I go to teach, what's your retreat going to be on? Is there a topic? And so I'm going to read what I wrote several months ago about this retreat and see if I can actually make the retreat fit what I wrote several months ago. We'll try. Getting in touch with and deepening into what brings your heart alive. Making more conscious that, you know, the meanings, the values of our lives. What we care about most deeply. And it's only it's my sister's birthday today. It's not 3 weeks into the new year, so you might remember that some of you made resolutions for your year. I hope they've all disappeared completely in that 3 weeks. But one of the things I'd like you to reflect on, did you have any kind of overt or covert intention for your year, this year? And if you did, some kind of resolve or, you know, welcoming or wanting more of something in your life, or less of something. Remember them. What did you say to your dear one, you know, when you kissed under the mistletoe, or whatever you did at New Year's Eve if you stayed up? What matters to you? I mean, we sort of get in touch in those moments with what really is important for ourselves. I would imagine then that it's either something about your own well-being, you know, your own health and well-being and happiness. I would imagine it's something about your relationships. I imagine it's something about your living on this planet. Hopefully we're all relatively green here. And it's about your relationship with those things, your contribution to your people, your well-being, your environment. Is that not true? Does that not include most of what we all care about? There may be particular things, but that's what matters to us, is our contribution to our life and our quality of living. And so when we meditate, we're actually tuning into this level of what's going on, and we're dropping down from the day-to-day busyness of our lives, all our worries and concerns and little details. What I wrote here, as far as what some of us wish for in these various ways, and maybe this is, I hope for this is relevant to you. When you think about it, you can make it relevant to you. Some kind of feeling of peacefulness and some feeling of joy. Peace and joy. They're the most used words when people send Christmas cards around. Peace and joy. What does that mean, actually? Peacefulness and joy. Happiness. Calm and happiness. And all through the teachings of the Buddha talks about if we meditate, as we meditate, one of the things that happens is we become calm. And when we become calm, it leads to happiness. Isn't that handy? And this is how it works. It's the what keeps us. We have happiness. We have experiences of happiness and fun and delight, but they're very short-lived, transitory, and they don't substantially change anything. They're just fun moments. You know, sweet moments, good, lovely moments. But they're not reliable. They're not reliable for deep happiness. Deep happiness isn't a momentary, you know, passing thrill. Deep happiness is a deeper, quieter sense of well-being that's available, that's a refuge, if you like, that's accessible. And what makes that available to us is, we have a sense inside ourselves of well-being when we unclutter the mind from all the concerns. As we become more calm, we therefore, in the calm, have a sense of well-being. The well-being, the deep happiness, is obliterated or cluttered or covered by all the concerns and the busyness. And when they subside, we find this upwelling well-being. It may not be happy Pollyanna kind of jumping up and down, but it's a sense of rightness, goodness, peacefulness, joy. The happiness of the Buddha is peace. And that's available when we quieten down all the busyness. So really what we're doing in meditation are two steps, all forms of meditation, and I don't know lots of traditions, I know this tradition, it's evolutionary thing, it's progressive, but the first one is calming down. And without calming down, the rest isn't possible. But as we do calm ourselves down, we discover other beauties, more profound. And one of them is a sense of well-being and joy, contentment. What I'd like to do this weekend is just to take those two steps, is to take the first one today, which is the calming down, which we have to do first. And then with a little more calm tomorrow, we'll have a little more sustained quiet. We're going to be able to deepen some of the access to joy and well-being. And I'll give us some tools and some, you know, methods and some of the ways I've been exploring in my own practice more recently. It's been pleasurable. So that's my intention for the weekend. And how I'm going to lay it out is I'm going to talk a bit more now about calming down and then move that into guiding us to practice some of that. And then I'll leave you basically to do your thing for the day with a few suggestions to guide you as we go through the day. But my main offering will be to set us up now, because we only have 2 days. After lunch, I will give us a little more guidance and make some particular suggestions, because I have certain things I'll zero in on. So we'll have a more of a guided meditation this afternoon after lunch. And again, then you'll be practicing these things I'm suggesting through the day. And then the same thing tomorrow morning. I will give a talk initially to sort of set us up for the day with suggestions to practice, and you'll practice them through the day, and I'll give a guided one again after lunch. That's how I'll lay it out. Also, not right away, because the first period you'll just be kind of getting here of walking, but the rest of the weekend, during the periods when we're not sitting in here, we're actually doing walking meditation, which I'll give instructions for at the time. When we get to those, then I'm going to go into this room right here beside the staircase. It's got the title on it, Theater. It won't be theater. It'll just be we'll just be sitting in there in a circle. But for those of you who would like, you know, we can be able to take 10 people or something, 10, 11 people, we'll just have the opportunity to have some questions and, you know, Q&A session with me, because it's a large group. And that way, if you have something coming up that you want more clarification about, or, you know, something to share with me that, you know, you're interested in my feedback and so on, then that's what I'll do. Make myself available to meet with you, you know, more personally in that way, in the theater. Any questions about anything I've said? Okay, you can all hear me okay now? Okay. So I'll start with, make sure there's nothing else I want to add. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's another thing I will mention. This is done formally when we have longer retreats, but it's just a thing I want to put into your minds. It's an agreement, really, to five things. There are five guidelines about living close together with each other in a way that relaxes us, enables us to trust each other, to feel safe, and not then have to be uncomfortable, especially among strangers, especially so close together. It's a reassurance. These are the five guidelines to, as best we can, and it's a practice, so we can't say I will, but I will attempt to respect in every way all forms of life. Most forms of life are hibernating outside, for instance. Most of there aren't bugs and ants crawling all over the place and so on. But there's a sense of reverence to life forms in every way. I'm not going to deliberately tread on a worm on the pathway. I'll avoid it and respect that it's a living being too. So open us up to be respectful of all forms of life, sort of a general one. Second one is to, as best we can, not take from anyone or take anything anywhere that isn't actually given to us. That's things, of course, obviously. Like, that's a nice shawl. I like that shawl. I think I'll have that shawl. That kind of, you know, low level of theft. But it's also just not taking people's attention or not taking too long in bathrooms, or, you know, it's about being content with what we have and not taking so that other people don't have. It's a kindness. It's an agreement we best we can. Third one is about sexuality, and it's an agreement to, in the actual retreat, obviously, it's we're not going to behave in any kind of sexual way with anybody, with our partners or anybody. But it's about not just acting sexually, which we're just in day-to-day walking around here, but it's not bringing sexual energy into the room, not placing any sexual desire on somebody, for instance, not like checking somebody out and following them around or thinking in terms of people as objects of one's sexual desire. It's so that none of us have to be guarded in that way. We're sitting really close together, and it's big fire in all of us, as we know. And so really making sure that that is not spilling in any way energetically in the room. It also means in general life, because these things apply to general life, is using our sexual energy only in ways which cause no harm, like never causing harm with that. We understand that, but here we are in just a day long, 2 day long, so it's about energetically being careful in that way. The fourth one is about speaking truthfully. Well, a lot of that's helped by your silence. But you're going to have a lot of internal chattering going on. You'll discover how much when you're quiet externally. And so make your internal chatter also truthful and kind. And that's easy to say. But actually, there's going to be a lot of whining, and what does she think she's doing? And so, or I'm such a, I can't do this, I'm hopeless. That's not true. You're not hopeless. So bringing a little consciousness to the quality of your internal as well as external speaking, let it be really true and kind. And the last one is an agreement to, and these are, you know, invitations as best you can to practice these things. The last one is an agreement as best you can. This one is more of a rule, I would say. no intoxicants being taken. This is not about medicine. This is about pleasurable intoxicants. No intoxicants being taken while we're practicing. It's really hard to practice and have your mind be present at the best of times. But if it's unruly because of being intoxicated, it's impossible. And so that's an agreement we also make. No sneaking out into the woods for a quick something. Can you agree to these five? I'm going to say them again. I'd like you to nod so I can see that you're agreeing. Respecting all forms of life. Not taking anything that hasn't actually been given to you. Being really careful with any sexual energy in yourself, not spilling it around. Speaking truthfully and kindly. And not getting stoned or drunk. Everyone is nodding and smiling, so that you know, the people behind you were nodding and smiling, so I'd like to reassure you that you're all safe. As far as best we can, we're going to behave ourselves and be careful with each other. It's really important. I kind of make it fun, but it's actually really important. And to have that expressed is important. So, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to tell a story, and some of you know this story. It's a little one of those Zen stories, pithy little Zen story. So somebody went to the Zen master. This is actually several hundred years ago, apparently. So it's definitely a history story. And it was a samurai type of person, man, who went to the temple to the Zen master. And he said to the Zen master, could you tell me, please explain to me the difference between heaven and hell? And the Zen master, sitting formally and quietly and calmly, looks at this samurai and says, what on earth? I don't know the exact translation of what he said. What on earth makes you think I have the slightest interest or time to speak to a big, fat, ugly, stupid idiot like you? Whatever. He was completely insulting. At which point, the samurai, who was very proud, you know, became infuriated and whisked out his samurai sword. Was about to decapitate the master, who calmly then says, that's hell. Samurai's like, oh my God. And really understands in a flash that it's inside his own mind. He was miserable. He was so miserable. He was about to commit murder. He was like, really so insulted. That sense when you're insulted, you know how yourself gets, how dare you say that to me? And so he realizes that it's his thing. Hell is here. It's not somewhere. And he's so appreciative, this sweet little old man, and he falls down on his knees. He's just like, thank you, I get it, you know, and he puts his head down and almost in tears, and the teacher says, that's heaven. Of course, it's, you know, simple, and as meditators, we know the reason we're meditating, it's our own states of mind that are our heaven and that are our hell. It's our mind, it's how we are inside, which is what's dictating our life. It's not the circumstances of our life. And when we don't have any meditation at all, we are new to this, we believe, and even when we've been practicing for some time, we still easily believe that we are dependent on the circumstances of our lives for our well-being. Unfortunately, as we know, when we think about these things with any serious consideration, these circumstances in our lives are endlessly going from wonderful to ordinary to horrible to ordinary to wonderful, and up and down they go. The Buddha called them the eight vicissitudes, ups and downs, pleasures and pains, griefs and pride and all of it, endlessly. And there's very little we can do about it, even though we think we can and we try. Even when we try, everything we think we could control, something goes and shifts something and somebody does something and oops. Our circumstances are not possible to be all pleasant. And so if we just depend on circumstances, we're always going to be disappointed and we're going to be up and down. And we can unhook our dependence on circumstances considerably and discover our own wellspring of well-being. But only when we realize that it's our response to circumstances that's creating the heaven and the hell, not the circumstances. And so we have to practice meditation. We need to train our minds, to work with our minds, to help our minds become useful. We use our minds rather than be used by them. With no training of the mind is simply triggered by circumstance. To be happy when it's lovely, to be irritated or afraid. We have different styles. You know, when things are negative, some of us get angry. When things are negative, some of us get afraid. When, you know, if we get negative, we get worried. Some of us just completely shut down. We have different ways of dealing with the difficult things. But the difficult things make us behave in certain ways when we are dependent on them. When we are independent, we're able to choose, basically. We have some freedom from reactivity. We can be making some decisions, making some choices, and what we're going to choose is those things you all wanted in your resolutions. You know, we want some form of peace and joy, some form of calm and well-being. We can choose them and we can actually access them. Unbelievable. Blessed be, I say. Let our minds be our friends and our helpers instead of these tyrants that drag us around thinking and feeling. So, interestingly, we discover we can do this flip with our attention. Our attention automatically, naturally, lands on circumstances, external to ourselves mostly. This person, this puppy, this weather pattern, whatever it may be, this scene, that's where the attention goes. Flip, 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 flip. We flip the attention and we can look in here. How is it in here? There's this happening, these circumstances, this situation. What's it like in here with this thing? We take the attention from the content, I call it, and go, how am I with this? That is what is going to make our well-being. How am I with it? If I'm irritated by it, I'm not happy. If I am appreciative of it, I will be happy. If I have space to say, oh, this too, I will be more peaceful than if I don't have space and I go, oh no, this is awful. So I want to see what my response is. That's what I'm looking at. In meditation, I'm learning to flip the attention and not exclude what's happening, not discount it, but see the relationship, my contribution, my response, how I am with it. When I do that, part of my attention is on the circumstance, part of the attention is on how I am. The circumstances have already lost significance because that's only part of what's going on. So they've already been reduced in power. See that? We can also not just look at how I am with something. We can notice, I love this. You know, I've been teaching this all these years. I've been practicing since 19, I don't know when. When did I start practicing? First meditation I was practicing was like in 79 or something. No, 68, 69, 70. That's when I began meditation. Transcendental meditation. I've been doing this Buddhist meditation since 81, however long that is. We can also notice, as we flip the attention to how I'm responding, we can notice that I am noticing how I'm responding. I can actually become aware of being aware. Awareness becomes where I notice. There's the things, there's my response to the things, and then there's my knowing that. So it's back. And we can keep going back. And we can notice awareness. Awareness is like, there's nothing to characterize awareness. It's quiet, it's spacious, there's just a knowing consciousness. Consciousness is in us, all of us. And we can get in touch with that part of ourselves. Unbelievable. And that can be really clear and really vast, and it can be covered a little bit. Layers, it can be covered by many layers of caring or judging or uncertainty or liking. We start getting interested in, it's not just interested because it's fascinating, but interesting because it actually changes the quality of our life, what's happening in this awareness inside. Now, some of you, I don't want to be speaking gobbledygook and you don't know what I'm talking about and it's all just words. And the interesting part in teaching is teaching a group of you and I don't know you and I have no idea how much meditation you've done or what's going on in your life or what kind of mind you've got, what state you're in right now and all of it. And so everything I say isn't going to be relevant to everybody, so that's fine. You don't have to try and make it all fit. Some of the pieces that I will offer will be helpful to you. And so you just take whatever. As I often use this analogy, I'm just going to be putting out a bunch of dishes on a smorgasbord. And you go to this smorgasbord, and you don't have to eat every dish on a smorgasbord. We don't. We just take the ones that appeal to us. So that's kind of in that spirit. So if some of you don't know what I'm talking about, awareness and states of awareness, don't worry about it. Another thing, as the mind becomes more mastery over our minds is what we're doing in meditation. As we are able to master our minds, manage our minds, use our minds rather than be used by them, is the minds become malleable. I like saying that word, but I like what it means. It's like the mind is adaptable, changeable. We can do different things with it. We can decide, for instance, when we're looking at how am I responding to this situation, we can say, I can respond to this situation with interest, or I can respond to the situation in terms of whether it's pleasant, whether it's unpleasant, or where in between pleasant and unpleasant it actually is for me. There's lenses that we can use, and the Buddha taught a whole lists and lists of lenses. Lenses meaning we pick this up and look at something, here are my glasses, like lenses, through which we can see the experience, but in terms of this particular lens. When I look at this experience, this situation, this conversation, whatever, person, through the lens of, do I want it to be some other way than the way it is, or am I okay with it as it is? These are the first and second noble truths the Buddha ever taught. When I can see some situation and let it be as it is and go, oh, it's like that, I'm not going to be stressed out. When I look at it and go like, I don't like it to be this way, I want it to be more that way, that's not okay. I'm troubled. I'm struggling with it. We can use that lens with everything. When the mind is malleable, we can say, what lens am I going to look through? Let me look at it in terms of that. Am I making sense? It's very skillful. It's we're working a little bit. We're not just like being, you know, at the mercy of life as it floods over us. We're making some choices. This is a malleable mind. We can say, I'm going to add kindness to this situation. I'm going to be kind to myself in this situation. It's a mind that remembers to be kind to itself. And it says, it's okay, dear. It's going to pass. You'll be all right. You know, you don't have to worry about this. So you've missed the ferry. You know, you'll get the next ferry. They'll understand. You know, it's about the weather. Or some kind words can come inside. You can choose to do that. We have to remember to choose to do that. But the mind that's malleable is useful, and it can do all kinds of useful things. When you're worried in the middle of the night, it says, there's no point worrying in the middle of the night. Let me read some of my favorite phrases on gratitude and calm myself down. That's a skillful mind. It's a malleable mind, adjusting itself to behave in a way that's helpful. And that's what mastery over the mind. And that's what happens as we meditate. We gain these skills and we discover we can use them at all kinds of times when we need them and bring more well-being. I want to convince you because you're already here. So obviously you want to meditate. I already know this. So calm is what we're focusing on today. Calm is often, you know, in metaphorically we say cool, calm, and collected. Those go together beautifully. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to cool down all the fires of excitement and upset. Calm, and we're going to collect ourselves. What we discover, and you, those who have meditated some for a long time, know that our attention is very scattered, very, very jumpy, all over the place. We're going to collect it into just a few parts of our experience. That's what helps the calming. Uncalm minds are jumpy. That a little, you know, I have a little grandson who's just turned 2, and he goes to daycare sometimes. Oh my God, can you imagine being a daycare? Anybody here is a daycare worker? A caregiver for children, little kids? None of you. If you are, I'm on my knees, honestly. All over the place, these little kids, and crazy and loud and very, very, very rapid. Oops, this is broken. Oh, this has fallen over. Oh, no. That's what the mind is like. It's like daycare for 2-year-olds. Bright lights and loud and absolutely randomness. That's what it's like in there. Well, we want to calm it down and collect it so it's not so random and not so jumpy. A little more settled down, calming. So I like the idea of collecting. So here are some tools for this to help us calm down. And we're going to actually do these together. I think I'm going to continue with what I'm saying down in on my bench where I actually practice. This is just so I could sort of see you and you could see me to begin with. So I'm just going to move down here. And you can just adjust yourselves, put down your watered pots and begin to settle yourselves because we'll sort of move this into practicing.